This is Jeff Chrisman, and I'm here today at the Yoga Room visiting with Nicole Peltier Hall, the owner. Nicole, thank you so much for taking the time.
Yeah, my pleasure.
I appreciate you letting me come into the studio and visit with you in between classes today.
Yeah,
I thought what we might do is to start out a little bit just for the benefit of listeners and also myself, since I haven't met you. This is the first time I've met you as well. It would be really interesting to hear just a little bit about your yoga practice and any spiritual practices that are associated with that. Mm-hmm. And then I figure we can just kind of continue the journey from there, if that's okay with you.
So what I'm doing now or how I started?
Yeah, actually, I thought we might kind of hear a little bit maybe about as far as your practice now. And then I thought maybe at that point we would kind of go back. And I really would love to hear your life, about your life journey and how your practice has evolved over the years.
Oh, yeah. So right now I get up before 6 o'clock, and I do kind of my own little hodgepodge of meditation techniques. I do a Kundalini Kriya breathing style. I do some just quiet meditation, and also kind of a manifesting. I do some manifesting for my day and for whatever it is that I want. I feel like we are really connected to the ability to create whatever we want. And so, and then I also, I do work out at a gym. I do that kind of physical activity. I trail run. And then I usually end up at a yoga, at either my studio or somebody's studio, mostly mine. I like going to other studios a lot. I just don't find as much time, but I love being able to just take a yoga class anywhere. I always enjoy that. I always feel like they're the teacher's style or take on it or theme that day or delivery always is fresh to me. So this journey is always evolving. And so I'll do a physical practice most days, but always I do my kind of meditation spiritual practice. That's my main thing.
Yeah, and I was wondering too, I find it very interesting that you say you start your day out early that way, and I'm curious. I don't often run into people who, you know, intentionally maybe start out really early in the morning. And so I thought I would just at my own curiosity, since I'm an early morning person as well, just kind of hearing a little bit about maybe what difference that makes in your day or how that's become
important.
Well,
it is a little bit of it's a commitment. And I have a family. And so for me to get a good night's sleep, 7 to 8 hours, I have to carve that out, and it has to come from somewhere. And since I get up early, I find myself sometimes difficult putting myself to bed. I don't want to miss out on anything. But so I find a balance. It's difficult sometimes. That's the only part that is the bite in it, is that I have to miss out on some things so I don't get my sleep doesn't get carved into too deep, because I do better in every way when I sleep a good 7 or 8 hours of sleep. Now, getting up in the morning, I used to get up at 4:47. That was a time that was just a number that I felt very resonant with. Now, because of my sleep going to bed, I have to go to bed so early to make that work. And I just was like, you know what? My family right now is important. I really want to be, you know, in the world, that I'm going to have to push that time. So I go 5:15, 5:30, 5:45 is when I usually get up, those three little times. And yes, I feel like more connected, more clear, that when I'm communicating, maybe I have a better ability to say what I want to say without too many fillers. A lot of times I get lost in my story, or I get sidetracked. That happens less when I do my morning practice. And I used to put so much emphasis on the body. And, you know, even in the Bible, it says body, mind, and spirit in that order. So it's hard to find the spirit when your body is all a mess, right?
Yeah, oh yeah.
And I used to be an alcoholic. I still, quote unquote, am. I don't partake of alcohol anymore. But when I used to drink, I had a really hard time doing any kind of spiritual practice. So I wanted to be that person that got up and meditated in the morning. I wanted to be that person that had all these, you know, devotional practices. I wanted to be the real deal, but I couldn't because my body was polluted from alcohol. And when I got that out, lo and behold, it was a lot easier for me to be the person that I wanted to be. which was kind of a connected to source person. I always wanted that. I always thought if I just did yoga, I would get that. But the alcohol was way too much of a block. And so there's, you know, what came before the get up in the morning and the great feelings about, you know, the great experience of the day, the positive effects of that is the night before. And when I changed the night before, which is not partaking in drinking anymore and not staying up late, that is more important to me as far as how I feel now than even what I did, what I do in the morning. So what I don't do.
That's very interesting. I never had really thought about that before, that it's almost like in a way you're kind of, it sounds like you intentionally are setting yourself up.
Yeah.
It's so interesting too, because I've not always been a morning person, but I've always felt like so much of the focus is on what I'm going to do that morning. But I never actually thought about the idea of setting yourself up this way and kind of, you know, it's almost like turning it around the other way and really focusing on the night before. So yeah. I do find this interesting.
And yeah. The night before, how that comes to be is the day before and that morning before. And it just, what you do has a butterfly effect, even in one small thing. And so, but then, you know, for me, I kept thinking I can have it all. I can be a night person, I can have a social life, which is really creative, fun, wild, whatever you want. And if I just white knuckle it, I can get up and be the yogi that I want to be. But it was all acting. It was performance for myself. I would say, yeah, I did it, if I did, but it didn't really work because I was just doing it for the sake of checking it off of a list. It wasn't real. You know, so until I was able to do the real work, which I call the weeding, you know, you can't plant a bunch of stuff in a garden that's full of weeds.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I could start a yoga yoga and a meditation practice, but where? It's full. It's full of the night before. So if I weeded the night before, which I still do things, I'm still active. I go to dinner and I go, my husband and I went on a long bike ride on Saturday evening and just went to all these different restaurants and we had a great time, but you know, I don't push it, and I try to be really careful about what I do as far as food, you know, because food will affect. If I have a big latte at midnight, well, there's no way I'm going to meditate the next morning because I'm not going to be sleeping well.
Yeah.
And so it just is, everything has an effect, and so you have to work backwards to what you want. You have to go back and see if you're setting yourself up for that.
Very interesting. And I feel like in this day and age when so many people are trying to have it all, in other words, you know, there's so many things that people want to do in the evenings with their free time, and there's so many options and so many things to go do. And yet, but at the same time, we only have so much energy. And sometimes I wonder if maybe that's the kind of the trick on this with people, is that maybe, you know, we've only got so much energy. You know, it sounds like you're very intentionally managing the energy.
I'm trying to. Intentionally being intentional. But that's called MOFO. MOFO. FOMO. Not MOFO. Backwards. FOMO. So FOMO is fear of missing out.
Yeah, I've seen that. I didn't know what that stood for.
Okay, so fear of missing out is that need to fill the space, or else we're missing something. And that, you know, media and advertising and you know, corporate, you know, big alcohol, big car dealer, everybody's telling you, you're missing out. You are. Go get it.
Yeah.
Go get it. You are empty without that. And, you know, you aren't going to have fun without that. And you're not going to feel good about yourself without that. And it's all lies. Because that propaganda keeps that machine going. It's all to change. So if you can say no, if you could say no a couple times a day, you're going to be able to say yes to the things you really want to say yes to. You can say hell yes instead of maybe yes, I'm going to try, I'm going to, I wish I could, I'm so busy. And the biggest unfortunate response to how are you doing these days is, quote, it's good, it's crazy right now, but when the blah, 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 then things will calm down. That never happens because that wheel spins faster. So that is all self-induced crazy right now foreverness that I have lived. I know this. That's why I can see it a mile away. But that is running at mock speed because FOMO. I'm going to miss out. I'm going to miss out. I'm going to miss out. I have to say yes to everything. Miss out, miss out, miss out. And also not preserving, like you just said, my energy, because you only have so much. And if it's dispersed everywhere, then when you really want to do something or you really want to be something, there's nothing left. And even the flight attendant will say, before you put the oxygen masks on all the other people that you love and care about, you must first put it on yourself. But we don't think that way.
Hmm.
We run out dispersing all of our energy everywhere else. Yes, 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 yes. And then we wonder why we're sick, tired, overweight, underweight, depressed, you know, needing a drink, needing marijuana, for Christ's sake, on every corner.
Oh, yeah.
Every corner times three. And it's fine. I don't care. But everything, we haven't looked here yet. And I'm not saying I know how to do that. I'm just saying that I can see that that was not the way for me, was to go looking down every alley of like, what are you all doing tonight? What are you all doing tonight? Gauging the fun things that are going to make me happy, and then needing alcohol or needing caffeine or needing sugar or needing to be texted back, like phone or approved of or hired or pretty or all the things, because that was telling me that I was going to be good enough or okay.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just not the way it is. And barking up that tree will only get you a lot of bark in your mouth and not necessarily what maybe you really want, which is just to be able to sit there like, okay. And that's why that meditation is so important, because that's all you have, is just sitting there being okay with all the bark in your mouth and with you didn't get to go to the party, or you did go to the party, or you are getting old, or you're not old enough, or any of the stuff that we're never going to be, it's never all going to be there.
Yeah.
That day never comes. It's here or it's never, it doesn't exist.
Yeah, and I would almost ask you how you discover that. I guess it would be, I really am very interested, you know, to hear about your journey and maybe how you came to that discovery that, you know, that
well, and it's still, gosh, it's not a total revelation. I'm still working out all the kinks, but it's in the what didn't work out. The trees that I barked up thinking, this is going to be the one that's going to make me happy. And I thought that if I went to college and I made straight A's and I worked really hard and I stayed super fit, didn't gain the weight that the other, they premonition, you will, that I would be superior, happy, glowing, you know, levitating when I graduated from college. And it was just like fell flat because I didn't really like the job that I was going into. It wasn't fulfilling for me. I didn't feel like I had really arrived anywhere different. It was the same old me in the mirror. And I started, you know, I felt the pressure of college was really intense. The studying, the everything, the money, I, you know, it was really difficult for me to come up with it all and do it all. And so I thought, I'm just going to take a break. And then that'll be fun. That'll feel good. I'll feel really accomplished and I'll also be able to breathe. And I just felt just so anticlimactic, really, was that moment, is that I just was like, what have I got really? Really, what have I got? And it just didn't feel like I had, I guess if you ran a marathon thinking that your whole family and all your friends and a big finish line and a trophy was going to be there, and you just kind of ran through and there was nobody there. You know that feeling, like,
oh,
you were,
yeah,
like, you'd been thinking there was some great thing was going to happen and you just kind of walked through and you were like, oh, is that it? You know, your tail goes down, right?
Yeah,
there's,
oh,
like,
yeah,
that kind of, this isn't really it. So I started thinking, well, maybe I just need to have fun. So I just started drinking and working at a bar, and that was not it. And then I got depressed really quickly because alcohol is a depressant. I knew that, but I just kept thinking that people look like they were having fun. So it must be fun. Maybe I'm missing out on that. Mm. So I started drinking a lot and working at a diner in the morning and drinking coffee. And I just thought, you know, I'm just going to be normal. I'm just going to do what other people do. This is, it seems fun. And I was immediately just completely depressed. I hit that bottom. And then I thought, maybe I need God. So I went to a church, and they were closed. It was like, it was a Wednesday night. I thought churches were open on Wednesday night, but they weren't. And I went downtown. I went to all these churches thinking God might be there and that might help me. And then I remembered there was this guy I had met on the running path, because I was a big time runner. And he had told me about this book called Be Here Now by Ram Dass. And he'd given it to me, and I never read it because I thought I was here now. I was so arrogant to think. I still am not here now, but you know what I mean? I thought, I don't need this. And I thought, well, he gave me that book. So I went and got it out of my trunk. It was still in my trunk. And in that book was his card. And I thought, I wonder if he knows how to be here now. And maybe that's what I'm missing, is the here-ness and the now-ness, because I feel like I've always been looking for the future. And that's not really where happiness is. And so I went to his house. His card had his house address. And I said, can you help me? And he goes, well, I'm going to meditation if you want to come. And I was like, oh, I don't know about that. That sounds torturous. And he goes, well, that might be exactly what you need. And so I did. I went to my first meditation, and I hated it, and I loved it. You know, it's just everything you want is uphill. And I was just climbing, you know. I was like, oh, well, this is hard, but it was worth it. And it got me some hope. It was like a glimmer of hope that there might be some peace somewhere in my life that I just didn't know where to look. And I, you know, running around in a circle, and then you all realize, oh, well, there's a poem about it, like, you know, and then you come back to yourself, and you know, you were never gone, or you were home for the first time, or you were home again. I don't remember how it goes, but it's like I went around the world and came back, and it was really me I was looking for.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
And so I started doing yoga, and then I went to Santa Cruz and lived there and did lots of yoga. And then I did a teacher training at Mount Madonna, the ashram there. And there was an enlightened being that lived there, and he gave me a Sanskrit name, a spiritual name, Yogita. And I was going to come back to Tulsa and open a yoga studio and be Yogita, this yogi, right? And I just knew that name wasn't going to fly because it has the word yoga in it, Yogita. And I thought, this is going to be the first yoga studio in Tulsa, and I can't name myself Yoga. Like, that'll be so weird. If they ever give me any other name, you know, like, there's all these beautiful names that I could have been, and it was like, well, I can't do that. So, but anyway, I did the yoga studio, and it was just became a job that was fun, but I didn't stay a yogi. I just became a business owner that taught a great class, but I didn't really have my own yoga, because it didn't matter anymore. I just did that. And then I drank the whole time. And I'm saying alcoholically, because in my mind I was obsessed with it, not because outwardly people were like, she drinks too much, or she got a DUI, or any of that. It was just my own conflict with asking people to come to their center and find peace within. Meanwhile, I couldn't wait to get out of there so I could find my center in a glass of wine. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was a conflict. But it wasn't a visible conflict. It wasn't socially a problem. It was just a problem for me. So meanwhile, I hated myself for being that. It was like I was having an affair. I was like, oh, I'm really here, but I'm really going to go there after this, which is not here. And it will be a conflict. Like if you had two marriages, you would keep lying to each other. And then, you know, it's neither one of them is rewarding, because yeah, you can't really be at either one. And that's where I was. I wasn't really a good alcoholic, and I really wasn't a good yogi. I was just like trying to be both of these things. And then when I cut the alcohol out, which was an act of God, 20 years after I started drinking, to almost the day, then I didn't realize that the thing that I was driving over to the guy's house to find was actually in sobriety. It wasn't in God. It wasn't in yoga. It was in not drinking. The things that I was wanting, it wasn't in my education, it wasn't in my workouts, all the things that I kept thinking were going to give me this supreme self-love was in the not doing of something, not the doing. So to taking out. And then my social life changed a lot too in the not doing, not going out as much, really at all. At first I couldn't because I was associated going out with drinking. So I was like, I don't want to go without even dinner. Because every time I went to a restaurant, I'd go, I don't care what you have to eat. Where's the wine list? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it was just a whole new world. At first it was really weird. It was like living somebody else's life. But, you know, a guy who got sober before I did, he said that this is what he did. He goes, I just wake up every morning and I pretend, I start acting like the person I want to be until I became him. And I was like, I'm doing that. And I just kept pretending to be the woman I wanted to be until I became her. And at first, you're just faking it because you don't know. You're just like, I think this is the person, you know. This is what I want her to be like. This is what she would do and say. She would go to bed now and she would drink hot tea and she would get up and she would meditate. And that's what I need to do is be like her until I am her. And that worked. So
is it really, if I understand you correctly, is it really about being here now? I mean, is that really what it,
yeah,
what this really comes down, mm-hmm, to is the, and I know sometimes I, you know, and I've experienced this along the way. I've talked to so many people and I've heard teachers talk about how sometimes it can be so, what's referred to as extraordinarily ordinary. There's just, it's not this.
After the ecstasy, the laundry.
Yes.
I think that's Stephen Levine.
Right? Yes.
After the ecstasy, the laundry. And yeah, it's just, you know, I like to say, I can't wait until blah, blah, blah. Even people, when they ask you if you're getting ready to go on vacation, they're like, aren't you excited about the blah, blah, blah? And I thought, even that is a disruption to your experience now. Because that might not ever happen.
Oh, yeah.
And you're living there. And when I was living in this alcohol mind, I couldn't wait till the wine. It was like every day I lived backwards from 5 o'clock. I couldn't wait to get out of the working and the working out and all that stuff so I could get to the wine. So later my whole life was set to happy hour backwards. And that was just misery. And then when I quit drinking, I was like, oh my God, there's no rush now. I don't have to rush to get home because I don't have that wine just waiting for me to open it. And I'd still eat and enjoyable food. I get to be with enjoyable people, but it's not addictive. And so it's that obsession that is so toxic. The obsession with anything. I mean, even if you're in love with somebody, you're obsessed with them, that's toxic for you. Because you need to be, your love of your life is you.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a surprise to me. I had some idea of that that's really where it's at. It was really a surprise because I always thought that it was.
Well, culturally, and societally, that's not a word, but let's just go with it. We're supposed to give, you know, everything away. And the last one that we're supposed to think about, and if we're not thinking about ourselves last, then we're selfish. And there is selfishness. I mean, when I was an alcoholic, I was the most selfish version of myself I've ever been, because I really did just want to get my wine and I just wanted you to get out of my face. And everything was to that end. But now it took me a while to take care of myself and self-care and not putting everybody and everybody's needs first, just like I was talking about, saying no is your best friend so you can say yes to the things that really matter to you. And for me, like saying no to a teaching job so I can go get a massage is like paramount. Because normally I would be like, no, I gotta work out, I gotta serve, I gotta do whatever it is until I'm exhausted. And if there's a breath left in me, then I'll give it to myself. And I think that I'm not the only one like that. There's a lot of people who are running ragged.
Oh, yeah.
And they've got diseases and their bodies are breaking down and they've got chronic fatigue and autoimmune and adrenal fatigue. And and they're eating on the fly, and they're eating terrible, not serving their body nutrient dead food. And monster drinks are ridiculous. I drive down the street and I see all the construction workers drinking monster drinks. It's like, it's so unnatural, the hits they're getting from that. It's like doing drugs. It's so intense. And there's got to be a better way. So and I'm not saying I don't do anything wrong. I drink caffeine and I eat chocolate almost every day. And I don't have any problem with that because I find that for me, I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that. But I also don't feel like I'm neglecting myself. If I was neglecting myself and sleep deprived and drinking monsters just to make it through the day, then I would know something's going to break. The bridge is out. You know, I got to turn around. And so yoga definitely helps. Yoga helps because you don't wear, you don't have your phone in a yoga class. You don't have your computer in a yoga class. And you don't have, a lot of times, a watch. You know, you don't know. You're not missing anything. And you leave the world for a moment, an hour, and do your thing. And then you go back and the world is okay without you. And that's a good reminder that we can take care of ourselves and that time will be created for us if we take the time. But yeah, being here now might be the big message, but it's really remember be here now is the name of that particular book. It's not be here now, it's remember be here now, because we know this, we just forgot. We know this already. It's in our DNA to know this, you know, but we just forgot. Do you think babies are going, oh, we're going to be late? They're just in the moment, you know? Yeah. Same with dogs. Dogs are little gods, I think. There's no coincidence that that's spelled backwards, God, because I think little dogs would teach us how to be here now. They teach us how to forgive. They teach us how to just be available for whatever's going to happen and to love unconditionally and loyalty and joy. You know, my dog jumps around and when I come home and I think I need to jump around all the time because this is a great life, you know, and they don't have any problem with being, unless we're kicking them and abusing them, you know, and even then they forgive. So it's amazing.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And I would ask you too, just as far as maybe how this is affected, I guess I would ask you as someone who teaches yoga and then someone who practices yoga, maybe, you know, how these changes that you've made in your life, or I guess I don't want to, you know, I'm just wondering if these have changed these experiences at all for you. In other words, on a day-to-day basis, what it's like for you to be a practitioner of yoga and meditation, and also at the same time being a teacher of that and dealing with people and what they're going through.
Yeah. Well, if I wasn't getting a lot of my own healing out of the teaching, I wouldn't teach. But it's like even my guru says, teach to learn. And so you're basically not teaching in a way that is, it's, I guess maybe, I don't know, I'm trying to think of an actor. They're doing it for the movie, for the writer, the producer, the box office. But they wouldn't do it unless it was really evolving them as an actor, or it was like a real compelling character that they thought they were going to grow from. I'm just guessing. That's how we are as teachers. Like, I don't take on classes that I don't think are going to serve me. Like, if it's not going to be something that I'm going to really be creative and invested in. And once you do start taking on classes, teaching a bunch of classes for the money or for survival, you get burned out and then you just want to quit the whole system. Mm. So if you can keep it where it's actually giving you as much as it's paying you, you know, everybody's winning. Like, the students are getting a lot out of it and the teacher's getting a lot out of it. Then it's going to work. But if I wasn't getting that, and I don't in some classes, and I give those classes away. But when I was still drinking, for 16 years of my career, yoga career, I was still drinking, meaning I would drink almost every night a glass or two of wine. I was in that vibration of doing it for the money, doing it because it's a job, doing it because that's what I have to do, doing it to get over it and then get to the other side where I could actually do something for myself. So it was a rat race in my head of some obligation that I had to do to get what I wanted. And I don't feel that way at all anymore.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I was going to say, I know early on, you know, anytime I did any spiritual practices, always every teacher that I came across, I almost, and I wonder if a lot of people do this, I don't know if it's a fair question, I get sometimes the feeling that people look at people who teach practices like this as, you know, completely realized beings that don't have any struggles.
And oh, God.
It's so easy to put people on, put people on a pedestal.
Yeah.
I don't know if that resonates or not in terms
of... Yeah, you think that they don't have any, you know, issues, and they're probably a perfect diet, and they don't cheat on their wife, and all this stuff. You just think they're going to be perfect people. But what I've found over the years is that I used to think that about therapists and psychologists, psychotherapists especially, that they got it all figured out. They know all the tricks and they are so evolved because they know all the loopholes. But probably they are just as screwed up as the clients because they actually got into that business to help themselves.
Oh, kind of at an unconscious level, or maybe, maybe some conscious, some unconscious.
And
maybe.
So as a yoga teacher, there is not one of us out there, I don't care what they say, that is not trying to find the answer for themselves. They're not doing it because they want to help all these people. Yeah, they might help a lot of people, but they're doing it to find out, to heal themselves. And I think that's the same for therapists.
Yeah.
They've got some karma work to do, and they're in that mission of trying to figure out how to help themselves, because a lot of therapists, they have just as many issues as their clients. You just don't talk about those, and we don't talk about it as yoga teachers, really, unless you're talking to another teacher, because the student wants the teacher to have some sort of like upper hand, like they've figured more out, but really not necessarily. They're just better at hiding it, maybe. Because I'm the master at hiding that kind of stuff. But there's just as much crap going on in my life than there is in anybody else's life in there. I've just, I had a lot of stuff go on. I had eating disorder and alcoholism, codependency, approval, junkie, like trying to make sure everybody was happy with me, which you just end up being fake and saying yes to everything. So I've been a lot of dark places. And even as a teacher, but you wouldn't know it. You wouldn't know it. You would think, oh, she's so healthy and she's got it all together and she's successful and confident. And meanwhile, I'm like completely insecure and hungover or overeaten. Like I've showed up at classes when I want to throw up because I ate so much. And you know, how you tell the students, don't eat 2 hours before your class. And here I am getting ready to puke. I'm so full. I'm like, oh my God, it's such a conflict.
Yeah.
So yoga as a teacher, boy, it really brings the mirror. Because you could probably show up to another kind of job and just like, nobody cares. You know?
Oh, yeah.
But this, you it's in your face. You know? And especially you're the leader. You're the one telling them how to live this life. And you're not doing it. You can't unknow that. You can't not know that. So something will break.
Yeah, I find that interesting too. I heard a teacher one time say, a spiritual teacher, that was saying that at the end of the day, all we can really do is all, what we can offer other people is the work we do on ourselves.
That's exactly true.
That when you were talking about that, it kind of brought that to mind.
Yeah. In fact, my best friend is an amazing yoga teacher, probably one of the best in all the land. And she used to be just a student of mine. She's well surpassed me, but as far as study goes, but training and everything. But she used to say to me as a student, because she knew me so well, because I can speak based off what I've heard and what I think could be a good thing to say because of poetry and things like that, that I think I sound legit. And she says, I can smell the fraudulence that you are speaking from hearsay and not from true experience. So you can't take them where you haven't gone. So shut up.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's serious.
And I was like, zipper zipped.
But I take it was said with love, though.
But she's, I trust her. You know, if you have somebody in your life that you trust like that, it's just, there's nothing gained from, she won't gain anything from telling me the truth. So it's a risk for her anyway. So I appreciate her risk, her courage to tell me. But yeah, that's what she told me. And I was like, really? Yeah, I can tell. You're just parroting. And it's not real. Shut up. And I was like, I'm going to shut up. And then sometimes I forget and I just start little, little, little. And then she'll go, I can tell you're doing that thing again. You need to shut up. So I like try to pass things off, not off, by me first. Like, is this true? Have I experienced this? And if I have, then I speak from that place instead of, I read this and this could be, because that isn't authentic.
I assume that has changed things for you in a pretty considerable way.
Because I was a parent then, because I was still drinking. And I was just saying the things that a non-drinker might say based off a good, real experience in yoga or meditation that I hadn't had yet. You know? You can do a lot of self, you can study all day long and you can find out every single thing that it could happen in a yoga practice. And you can be an expert in the field, but you might not ever have the experience yourself.
Is it possible to be so busy trying to have the experience that maybe then you kind of miss?
If you're heady, maybe, if you do too much study and you don't really give yourself a moment to breathe. Actually, as a teacher, even I teach teacher trainings, and I teach the cueing section where you're cueing the postures. And it's very overwhelming. You think as a teacher that might be the easy part, but it's actually the probably one of the most challenging parts, because it has to do with timing. Not saying things too early. Not saying I'm late. Not saying too much. Then you dilute what you want to say. Not saying not enough, so they don't know what you're asking them to do. But one of the most common pitfalls for teachers is they don't give the student a chance to actually experience what they're asking them to do.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So, you know, you're describing it so much that it actually never gets to happen.
So does there have to be some kind of some silence to just
let... Yes. Yes.
And I'm assuming as a teacher, maybe that is also somewhat of a... I would assume that takes a deepening of practice and an evolution as a teacher.
And so faith.
Because
if you don't trust the silence is going to be well received, then you're just going to feel like you aren't saying enough or doing enough or being enough of a teacher, or you're letting them kind of fling out there, and you're, you know, people will say to me all the time, God, I didn't say enough, or I didn't say anything, and I was so worried that they were wondering if I knew what I was, like I forgot what I was going to say. Like, is anybody here? You know, just left us hanging. I'm like, no, if you speak with confidence and conviction, they will not ever wonder. They won't wonder one thing. Everything you do, whether you do or not, whether you say, what you don't say, will all be right. But you have to come in that practice, really. Or you have to be a really good actress, and you can pull it off for a little while.
And I assume a lot of students may not notice, they may not know.
They won't notice. A lot won't.
Very interesting. I was going to say, I'm actually glad that the conversation has gone this direction, because I don't think I've known yoga teachers, but I have, and it's obviously something I've been very curious about, just hearing, you know, what it's actually like to teach. I mean, I appreciate you sharing what you have, because I've never thought about it from the perspective of the person that's teaching.
Yeah.
I've never thought about what that experience is like. And maybe that's only because I've been a participant in a class and I've never taught.
Well, you know that expression, don't trust a skinny chef?
Yeah. Yes.
Right? You're like, you're not even eating this stuff, right? How do you know? Obviously, you don't try any of this stuff.
Yeah.
That can't be true because of Gia or Gaia or whatever that beautiful Italian girl is, beautiful body, and she's cooking all these amazing meals. But a yoga teacher who has no yoga practice, what do you think?
Yeah.
I'm an example of that because I used to not. My classes were way busier than them because I was one of the only teachers in Tulsa, and I had a big studio, and it was really popular. So people didn't care. But I did. And when your teacher is coming from shame, insecurity, not good enough, but parrots and acts and looks the part, something is incongruent. You just don't know what it is. You don't know. Something's off, but you don't know what it is as a student. But when the teacher is coming at you, maybe they don't look the part, you know. Maybe they aren't popular. Maybe they're not on the cover of magazines or anything like that, but you just know when you're there. 5 minutes in, you're like, this is it. You can just feel it. And you don't even need to know what it is. You just know you're in the right place with the right energy.
Yeah. And I wonder too but I guess that does require the whole willingness to be present enough to be able to perceive that. I guess some of that can be unconscious to a certain degree, but to really be present for it.
A lot of people come in with so much stuff that there's really, it's hard to get present because they're really coming because they're broken. People come to yoga because they want better. And also they stay in yoga because they want to keep better. So first 10 years of yoga that I took, I didn't come in with my cup empty, going, oh, what am I going to get from this class? I came in with my cup full and spilling and all the things. And I was there and I was thinking, what a rock star, or what a great teacher, or what a crappy class, or the music sucks, or whatever I did. But I wasn't really there. And I'm not saying I'm there now. It was just a lot more likely the more stable and whole that I am, the more I can be there and be here, right? Or anywhere. But when you come to yoga, you're coming broken most of the time. So to ask them to just pull it all together and be present for that is really like, that's a lot. They're learning how to pull it together and be there. They're not there yet. Not necessarily. I mean, I taught a class yesterday at a park, at a campground at Turkey Mountain. And it was like, you know, there was hundreds of people there. There's only a couple people showed up for the yoga class. And one of them was like a 9-year-old little girl. And she was, so there was like two other people, adults, that do yoga a lot, so they knew what to do. And there was one little girl who's probably 9 years old. And she was, I think, probably one of the best students I've ever had in my life. Because she wasn't worried about what she was doing. She didn't bring anything in. She had her eyes just blinking like these big blue globes, and she just took it, everything in. Even when she was falling, she didn't go, oh, I fell, I have to now look around, or get mad, or make a joke. I mean, it's not her fault, the kids that do that. It's just that she was there, and she was solid. She was like the teacher. I told her that. I was like, she can sub my classes. This girl right here knows what's going on. So sometimes the more you know, the less close to the source you are. She didn't know anything. She'd never done yoga before. And she was just pure light. It was really inspiring.
Yeah, I was going to say, I know for some reason, I can say I'm definitely guilty of this, you know, starting on the spiritual path. You don't want to read all the latest books.
Yeah.
You want to hear all the latest, you know, talks. You know, but it's so tempting, isn't it? It's almost like if I read the next one, I'm going to get there. If I hear the next one,
so
you know,
tempting.
From that teacher, then it's finally.
Yeah.
But
yeah. Yeah. Just got to put the book down and do it. It's kind of like this. If you said to me, I really want to be a runner. And I go, all right, go run right now. You go, no, I gotta read the books and I gotta talk to the coach and I gotta get my food, like my running food and my running shoes and my running shorts, and you never run.
Yeah.
You might be overqualified by the time you even go. You just, and how do you start being the person that you wanna be? You just have to start right now. You just do it right now. I wanna be a runner. Run right now. Go run right now. That's what you do right now. And you might run 10 steps, but you're freaking doing it.
Yeah.
You are not just talking about it. So one of my mottos is start before you're ready and figure it out after you've already leaped. Figure it out after you've already jumped out. You got to jump, and then your wings will appear. But they won't if you just stay in that nest. You can't do anything in that nest, really, but prepare. But if you jump out, you're going to have to fly, or you will die.
Yeah, oh yeah.
So that's how I do most things. Is I just, once my heart has spoken, I just dive in. And then I figure it out afterwards, which is really scary. I mean, it took me a long time to quit drinking. But the reason why it took me so long was because I tried so hard to prepare for it.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I was like, okay, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, and then that. And oh, Thursday's our anniversary. I don't want that. I just, too much thinking. It was like I went to court and I had to, it was a case. What about this? What about that? What about this? What about that? Well, oh, well, case is still open. You know, we're going to come back tomorrow. And when I finally decided, it was like, case closed. Research done. I'm going to run now. Like, run now. Like, this is it. And so what I did was I went from that day, I told everybody I knew that I no longer drank. Mm. Which is weird. Nobody does that. It's like telling everybody you're pregnant when you've just found out you're pregnant. Oh, guess what? I'm having twins, and their names are this and that, and they're going to go to Harvard. Like, you're like, you just have one day you're pregnant? Like, one day? You don't do that. That's premature. But that's what I did. And it worked.
Yeah. Do you think there was something that you knew inside that's just what you had, that's just the way you had
to
do
that? Yeah, over-preparing thing was not working.
Yeah.
It was not getting me the outcome I wanted. And also the keeping it inside, not telling anybody, wasn't working at all. And so once I started telling people, it worked, because you manifest through words and writing and just doing, you know? And I was just kind of secretly conspiring this plan that I was going to quit drinking and I was going to be this person who just didn't drink anymore. And that just doesn't work, you know? It just didn't work. It doesn't work that way. You just have to open it up, be vulnerable, share. You have to show up. You have to have a community. You know, you have to freaking be raw and naked, basically, and bare your soul if you want great change. Because if you keep doing the same thing you've always done, you're going to get the same outcome you've always gotten. It's just the way it is. So if you want a radical change, you've got to do radical things. And that's what I did, radical things. And it was amazing. It was the best thing I ever did, was put down my favorite thing. Put down my favorite thing. And then I got 1,000 times better. It's just like the biblical term. And I'm not religious at all, but somebody said this, you know, twofold. And I was like, that's such an old term. She goes, I gave one and I got twofold. And I was like, well, that's what happened when I quit drinking. I was like, I gave my wine back and I got like 20,000 fold. I got all the things that I was wanting the wine to deliver. And that same with yoga. When you go to yoga, you go because you want to be more limber, or you want to sleep better, or you want to be skinnier or whatever. But it's 20,000 fold what comes from it if you just do it. There's no way to gauge what you're going to get, because you're going to get so much from it. Otherwise, I wouldn't do it.
And I'm assuming when you took this leap, I mean, I'm assuming, did you not really necessarily know how you were going to feel after a while of after you took this leap or what, you know, what, how?
Oh, you God, you absolutely do not know. You think it's going to suck because you're so used to this other way. You know, it's going to suck. And at first it does. So just like if you was like said, I'm going to be a runner. I go run right now. Guess how? That's going to be so hard.
Oh, yeah.
Every step is going to suck, but not for long. Eventually, you're going to be like, I'm a runner. I love it, you know. I can't imagine not being a runner, you know. Or whatever it is, you know, you could say anything. A climber or a chef or whatever, you know. You just have to start. And you don't really know how you're going to feel. You just know that you're going to be better than you were. Otherwise, there's no way you would go that through that rigorous transformation if there wasn't going to be a better way on the other side. Just like a caterpillar. That's probably a good life. You know, it's very grounding. But you move slow. And you don't have a view of anything down there, I'm sure. Maybe a little bit if you stick your head up. But there's this like this thing you can become, a butterfly, but you have to go into this really awkward, uncomfortable metamorphosis stage in the cocoon. They don't even have a name for what that is inside there.
Oh, yeah.
Like that chrysalis mush that you're unidentifiable. You don't even know who you are, right? Because you're not what you were and you're not what you're gonna be. So you're really nothing if you're okay with that. And then once you start becoming something, you're in there, it's super awkward, you're too big to fit in that thing, and you need to get out, but you can't get out unless you push out. You have to push out. You have to squirm really fast, called friction, and you move really fast to break the cocoon. Nobody can cut you out. If they do, you'll die. It's been tested a million times by little boys who have scissors and are very curious about what's going on in there. And they die because their wings aren't strong. It's the friction that it takes to get out of that cocoon that gives them the training to get up in the air. And if you take that away from them, you basically are killing them. And we do that when we give people antidepressants. And we do that when we give people all these drugs and say, you don't have to suffer. Don't cry. Don't mourn. Don't experience that. You shouldn't be uncomfortable. Take this. I'm not saying everybody. I'm just saying the society. Drink that. Smoke that. Eat that. Buy that. You shouldn't be uncomfortable. They don't get out of the cocoon. And they won't have the strength to fly. And they want to fly. But we've all robbed them of that. Clip their wings. Oh, don't suffer. Don't be uncomfortable. Should never be uncomfortable. So you need to be uncomfortable, actually, to get what you want, to get onto the other side. And uncomfortable, not like pain, but like friction. Keep going, keep going, keep going. You're almost there. So that, it's a whole different world. And you get up in the sky. I mean, I'm sure it was fine being a caterpillar, but it's nothing like being a butterfly.
Oh, yeah.
You got both worlds. You can come down, you can see everything, you can flutter that way, you can go fast, you can go slow. I mean, it's amazing. But what does it take? It takes that cocoon, that awkward thing. And so in your life, what do you want? Well, guess what? You got to get really uncomfortable, unidentifiable. You're not this, you're not that. You're not what you were, you're not what you're going to be. And it sucks. But are you willing to do that and not take any shortcuts? Because if you cut yourself out, it's not worth it now. You're going to die. I just read, your comfort zone will kill you.
That definitely resonates with me.
Yeah.
It certainly does.
Your comfort zone will kill you.
Yeah.
And so you know what? We need to get uncomfortable. And everything you want is uphill. Every single thing you want is uphill. Are you willing to climb? Or do you want to just slide down to the bottom and just lay there and go, yeah, well, this is just how it is. It's not. It's not how it is. It's the collective sulking that we've seen. Well, I'm just old. I'm like, you're 40. No, you're not old. you know, or I just can't sit still. I go, you haven't tried, you know, it's just, and it's me, I'm not doing this to them, I'm doing this to me. Everything we say, we need to hear. So this is, I didn't know I was going to feel like this. I feel really good. I didn't know that that going to church and going to yoga and going to teacher training and opening a yoga studio and having an amazing physique and being healthy and all those things weren't going to be it. It wasn't going to be it. The it was from not doing something. That's the biggest takeaway for me. And also, that teaching is still very intriguing to me because of all the things that I get to work on or in my face a lot. There's really nowhere to hide when you're a yoga teacher. You can't hide in your cubicle, you know?
So. Yeah, I look around here and it's, there's really nowhere to hide here, is there?
No, there's nowhere to hide. So, you know, we signed up for this somehow, this kind of living in real time, you know, out loud kind of thing. So it's good. I love it. I would like to take it further. I would like to be a national teacher teaching at yoga festivals or at big retreats. I want to take my show to the road, no pun intended, not really a show, but my practice. Because I feel like the recovery world meets yoga is really big and important right now. And I also feel like we are all in recovery from something. So even if you're not doing that, I have something to help. Yoga will help. My language will help. And what I've suffered through and what I've experienced and what I've learned along the way can help. I feel like I have a lot to offer and more than just here in Tulsa. I just really want to take my experience, and I have already, but I want to go bigger than that. So I would like to every month leave Tulsa for a weekend and go teach in another city and share my styles, which is the popular, the ones that I feel most resonant with is what I call beat-based yoga. It's hip-hop and rock and roll music. And you move to the beat of the music. It's very fun. And it's very physical. It's just a blast. And kids can do it. And anybody can do it. It's not technical at all. It's very user-friendly. It's come on, bring your kids. It doesn't matter. Let's do this. And that breaks down that whole I can't do yoga because I can't sit still thing. Or I can't do yoga because I'm not flexible thing. Like, everybody can come. They can all do it. It's fine. It makes it real. The playing ground is leveled. And then the transformation yoga, which I call Raven Yoga for Freedom, is about untethering yourself or weeding, doing the night before thing so you can have the day that you always want, like weeding your garden so you can plant what you want. And everybody has weeds. We all do all the time. So are you willing to pick that big one, though, that's blocking your light? That's the question. And if you're not right now, let's start working through the body and see if we can get there. Because sitting in front of a therapist or in an AA meeting or all that stuff is fine, but you're not moving your body and the body keeps the score. You've got to get your body moving. You have to move your body. In my opinion, that's where the secret lies, especially with people who have quit drinking and they're sober, but they're miserable. They need to get their body moving, in my opinion. That's what's worked for me and a lot of people that I've helped. So I want to take that out.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah.
That's really cool. Do you see as part of this, you actually talking with people?
And yeah.
You know, some of what you shared today?
Yeah.
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 So I created a style of yoga called Raven Yoga for Freedom. And Raven signifies that flying. I imagined that when I was still drinking, when I had an eating disorder, even before that, that I was a big bird with healthy wings in a cage. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you can't really fly. You could, but you're in a cage. So my drinking and my eating disorder was like, it kept me in a cage. I wasn't able to fly. When I got out of that, I was like, oh, this is amazing. So it, whatever your addiction or obsession is, or the thing that's holding you back, it could be a marriage, it could be a way of eating or not eating or sleeping or drugs, you know, taking sleeping pills or whatever you're doing that you know is like, oh, I wish I didn't have to do that. You know, whatever it is, that's your cage. And you could fly, but you can't in there. You could decorate your cage really well. You can have TVs all around, and diamonds on the floor. It doesn't matter, but still a cage.
Yeah. Is the idea here that people maybe don't realize they are capable of flying, but maybe it's...
You got to get out of the cage.
Yeah.
Got to get out of the cage. And the cage is familiar. That's the problem. And it's cozy. It's comfortable.
Oh, yeah. It's this.
You know what I mean?
This feels very familiar.
Yeah, yeah. It's very comfortable. All your friends are there.
Yes.
All your friends are there. And, you know, your favorite pillow. And my drinking cage was that image of me having really good drinking friends. My wine was really good quality. And it was just a well-decorated cage. It was good quality. It was pretty. But it was still a cage. And I can't. If you had a bird that never flew, wouldn't that be sad?
Yeah.
Why would they have those wings? You might as well just take them off.
Yeah.
And have them just bobble around on those tiny little feet. That's what we're doing when we're not flying. It's awkward. And it's not thriving. It's just surviving. So if you want to just live your entire life in survival mode, there's a way you can do it. Just stay in your cage. But if you want to fly and thrive, then you need to push that door open, and you're going to be in that weird little chrysalis area where you're not sure who you are, and you look kind of dumb, and nobody knows you anymore, and all the weird stuff, and then you can fly.
Yeah.
But you have to go in with, it's total like, I'm in. Desperate. They call it in AA, the gift of desperation. Desperate for it. Because otherwise you'd just be like, this sucks, I'm back. Hey guys, I'm back! I was only gone for a day. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. I wonder too, sometimes all those things that we do to kind of, you know, try not to, whatever we're doing, to not be uncomfortable. At some point, you get to a point where it just, you milk that for all it's worth. And it just, at some point, it's like an empty hole that you just cannot fill no matter what you do.
No filling it anyway, but there's a meditation spiritual teacher named Tara. God, I had her name there. I'll come up with it later. But anyway, she talks about, she does, you might look it up, podcast on the hungry ghost.
Yeah, is it Tara Brock?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hungry
yeah,
ghost.
I've heard, yeah.
And the necks are really skinny and their bellies are really big and empty and they want you to feed them. But you can't, it won't feed them.
Yeah.
And so it's just that, like, for me, I kept wanting alcohol to be a reward. Like, oh, you did so good. You're doing so good. You deserve this. You worked so hard, and you worked out, and you just did such a good job today. Like, maybe it was my mom or something. I just needed something to cuddle me and say I did a good job.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally understand. I feel like I understand.
Yeah.
I really do.
But
yeah,
it never did that. It always bit me in the butt. Always did. It always fell short. So, and then food, I did the same thing with food before that. And what I was really looking for was just probably something I didn't get as a child, which was just being self-assured. I didn't know that I was okay. I thought I had to be okay based off everybody else. And that's so fragmented that, of course, you're not going to be balanced. So I was just ping pong ball all over. And now I don't need it from my parents. You know, they missed their shot at helping me with that. But yoga has really helped me. And then, you know, sobriety helped me more than that. Because I don't have anywhere to hide. There's no looking away. There's no avoiding the feeling. You just have to grow. So.
I really honor your willingness to sit here with me today and for your willingness to be very candid, very frank, and very upfront about all this. And I mean, this has impacted me. I honor you, and I'm not just saying that because this has been something that I definitely have been impacted by this.
Oh, wow, good. Yeah.
So I mean, to me, this is a beautiful thing when it can be, you know, it's a conversation on one level, but then on another level, it's an opportunity to have, you know, to have someone's consciousness change. So
yeah.
I really appreciate that.
Oh,
thank you so much.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
All right.